Hi, this is Gretchen Men and I focus on metal.
You have just entered an undiscovered room in the Focus on Metal house. Welcome to the Psycho Dungeon. Day on Focus on Metal.
I just have to pick up the guitar. I couldn't help it. I just had to pick up the guitar, and I actually never really thought I'd get serious about it. I just thought that, you know, it would be really cool to learn how to play a few things.
We talked to amazing guitarist Gretchen Mann about her tribute projects, as well as the launch of her solo career. During the show, we're going to get into some metal news, like we'll find out what is Dave Mustaine's favorite Slayer song, and how many albums does it take to get into the top 10 at the Billboard? The answer is frightening. Hey, all metalheads, and welcome to another edition of Focus on Metal. I'm Dario Psycho, and some of you are probably wondering, what the fuck is going on? Well, I wish I had a clear explanation for you guys. Unfortunately, I don't, but if you're wondering where is Mandy, she's not here. Mandy is not feeling well. She can't be here for many reasons. I am one of those reasons. I'm not going to get into details with you guys, but I have decided that I'm going to continue. It's almost against my will. I did say that I wasn't going to do this, and you know what? I'm not doing this. Focus on Extreme Metal currently is on hold until Mandy comes back, and the position is always going to be open for her. Whenever she does come back, that show will resume. Meanwhile, I have no energy, I have zero interest, and no motivation to continue doing the show, but I'm here for a number of reasons. One is, I received enough positive feedback last time I flew solo from you guys that I said I'll give it another try. Another reason is, we are on the radio and we love being on Pure Rock Radio. By the way, welcome all your listeners. But what it does, it puts pressure on us that to have a show out every week, and I could not get the classic duo of Scott and Julian to do a weekly show, and I decided to carry on for metal. Another important reason is I did an interview recently with an artist that I really want to introduce you to. And probably the biggest reason of all is that I have a slight spark, a tiny glimpse of hope that Mandy does return, because I really don't want to be doing solo episodes. I created the show to do a dialogue exchange between members, not to do it myself. So like it or not, I'm here. And if you don't like it, send me an email. Say, get the fuck off the air. And you know what? If I get enough negative feedback, I will be out, and I will just contribute as I was planning on just small segments for the classic show. What I'm doing with this, obviously, I will not be doing Extreme Metal Podcast, but I will not be doing classic either. I'm going to be doing something in between. Hopefully, this will be a discovery lesson for a lot of you. Like today's my guest today for sure. I will not be playing like Brain Drill or Cephalic Carnage, but you know what? I won't be playing friggin' Crocus or AC/DC either. Well, the funny thing, I should say that because my first guest today used to play in an all-female AC/DC tribute band called AC/DC. She is probably better known for her role as Jimmy Page or Jane Page, no. As the female Jimmy Page for another tribute band called Zeppelin. Of course, that one is a tribute band for Led Zeppelin. But she wants to be better known as an artist who produces her own music, and she's about to embark on a solo career. Her first debut album will be out in May this year. Her name is Gretchen Mann, and she has a very rich, colorful history already. And I'm dying to introduce you guys to her. One thing to keep in mind, and you know what, as much as I love her music, I got introduced to it recently. The one thing that I really like about Gretchen is she is so accessible to fans, to her friends. You know, I friended her on Facebook, and I noticed that she posts replies on her wall to almost everything that she receives. And not only that, she does that to her fan page on Facebook as well. And you know what? You just don't see artists like that anymore. I hate people who act like freaking rock stars. You want to impress me? Act like you're down to earth, for crying out. You don't become busier person once you get signed to a major label. In fact, you probably get lazier because people do shit for you. So if you really want to impress me, act like Gretchen does. I'm going to get right into the interview with Gretchen and some amazing music of hers. This will be from her upcoming CD. What else is coming up on the show, guys? I have a bunch of music that I'm going to play for you. I'm really just flying by the seat of my pants today, so you know what? Whatever happens, kind of happens. So I'm not really predicting a lot of stuff to go on the show, but I will talk a bit about some of the news items. Like I said, some music. And you know what? Mandy and I recorded a little segment a while ago, about a month ago. And we got talking to somebody I know that I think you might find interesting. And since I'm kind of, you know, I don't want to say I'm short for content or anything, I think this is very interesting. It's not as metal, maybe, but it's very educational. And that's what I want this show to be. I want this to be an educational discovery for you. Hope you can enjoy this. Meanwhile, let's get into the interview with Gretchen Mann. I got introduced to you through a friend of mine, Nancy, who almost made it to Jason Becker benefit at his house there last week. I believe you were part of that. Did you?
Well, I was there, but I was just there as an avid fan. I did have two of my bandmates from other projects who performed in the show that night, so I was there just to support and to geek out on the amazing guitar playing.
So, and this was at Jason's house?
No, it was at Slim's, which is a club in San Francisco. It was totally packed. I can't imagine. I mean, you'd have to have a pretty big house to fit all of those people.
Yeah. I thought it was like a smaller gathering. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So tell me about yourself. You have a very interesting history of playing guitar, and I guess it kind of starts at home with your dad, who, you know, is well-known editor at Guitar World and a music journalist. So
he was at Guitar Player magazine.
Oh, Guitar Player. Okay.
Yeah. He, you know, actually, I didn't really know what my dad did for a number of years. You know, when you're a kid, like, it's easy to reduce what adults do into like the most basic of terms. So it's like, my dad is a banker. My dad is a fireman. You know, my dad worked at a magazine was all I really knew. And even that was sort of, I had to think about it. I knew he went to a place called GPI, and I knew some of his friends who were really cool, like Jazz Obrecht and Tom Wheeler, you know, those were like, you know, my dad's friends. And, but it wasn't until, I guess I was in high school, that I started just, you know, as most kids do, getting really super into music. And that's when I kind of started realizing that my dad knew something about music. and then specifically when I got into kind of guitar-oriented music, he was kind of like, well, wait a minute, like I do know something about this. And so he never pushed me in that direction at all. It was more that when I expressed the interest, you know, I could raid his record collection, find the Dixie Dregs and Johnny Winter and stuff like that. So it was mostly that it was available to me once I kind of got interested in it on my own.
So your dad never tried to get you interested in music, playing guitar or anything like that? Because I think you were, what, 15 when you got into, like, when you started playing guitar?
I actually really started playing when I was about 19. I mean, I had a lesson when I was 15, but, you know, I didn't really actually, like, get my, you know, I didn't actually start practicing and taking lessons and stuff until I was 19. But, no, my dad never pushed me in that direction. I mean, you know, much to his credit, although there's a part of me that thinks, oh man, I'd be so much better by now, like, if I had started when I was like 9 or something like that. But, you know, he always said that, you know, has always said that he determined early on that it was his main goal as a parent to help me figure out what it was I wanted in life and to help me then get the skills to achieve it. So he really had no preconceived notion of what I should or would want to do. So I think it's probably just like a kick to him that I ended up, you know, it's a good case for genetics, right?
For sure. So tell me about your influences as you got into guitar. Who was the first one that you looked up to?
Eric Johnson, for sure. Eric, you know, it's really funny. Like, I mean, I can, if I really reverse engineered, I can trace that I started getting interested in guitar-oriented music when I got into Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. But, it was a very clear moment that I remember very, very distinctly. And it was, I went to go see Joe Satriani, and I didn't know who was opening for him, but there was a song that had been playing on the radio that had just completely captivated me. And I remember my dad, like, listening to it with me, and I'm like, okay, who is this? And he was like, listen, he's like, God, it sounds like Eric Johnson, but I can't imagine that they would play him on the radio. And he meant it as a compliment, you know, that music that's that high of caliber a lot of times doesn't get radio play.
Absolutely.
And it was Cliffs of Dover,
of course,
you know.
I was just gonna say.
Of course. And so anyway, it kind of, I had only heard it one time, but it had really like stuck with me. And we go to this concert, and all of a sudden there's the song. And it was like, it was so magical. It was the most, just, it was like the most gorgeous thing I had ever heard. And I had this moment, you know, already I was interested enough in guitar that I showed up at a Joe Satriani concert. But I had this, in my mind, this like revelation, thinking like, this is so exuberant sounding. Like, either the person who creates this is the happiest person in the world, or being able to play this music causes you to be the happiest person in the world. And so I thought, you know, I just have to pick up the guitar. I couldn't help it. I just had to pick up the guitar. And I actually never really thought I'd get serious about it. I just thought that, you know, it would be really cool to learn how to play a few things. You know, so of course, like my first guitar lesson, I'm like, can I learn how to play Cliffs of Dover? You know? And my teacher's like, oh, sure. So he was my first very clear early influence. And then, you know, from there, Steve Morris was also an mm-hmm. early and both of them very enduring influence. That was actually kind of a funny story too, because, you know, at that point, you know, kind of the big guys of instrumental guitar were Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, and Eric Johnson, you know, was getting a lot of notoriety too, because Cliffs of Dover was such a huge hit. And I remember seeing an article like in sort of like the local music paper. And it started off saying something like, oh, I wish I could find it. I've actually searched for it and I haven't found it, because it was such a funny quote. It started off saying something like, you know, more aggressive than Eric Johnson, more musically spacious than Joe Satriani, more technical or something like that mm-hmm. than Steve Vai, Steve Morris, blah, 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 blah. And those to me were completely heretical comparisons. Like, you did not, like, who is this guy and who does he think he is, as if he had written the article, but like, you know, how dare they. And I remember, you know, bringing it back to my dad and showing it to him with this complete indignation of like, who is this guy, and you know, why would they, like, you know, clearly this must be wrong. And my dad actually was like, no, actually Steve Morris was, you know, one of his favorite guitar players. And next thing I knew, I showed up at a show and was completely blown away. Instantly went out and bought High Tension Wires and have never stopped listening to uh-huh. it. So,
and then music, of course, took over your life, because you went to you earned a degree. And tell me about that, like, because I, you know, it took over. Like, is it true that you have a pilot license as well?
Yeah, it's true, just, actually.
Because talk about passion music, because I guess you were studying to be a pilot, and you got your license, your commercial flight license,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you chose music.
Yeah, well, actually, the way that it happened is I actually chose music first. Okay, so when I was in high school, they offered advanced placement classes. So it was basically classes that were considered college-level classes, but given through the high school. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought twice about it. It was just I was recommended to go in the classes, and I took the classes I was recommended for. And then they said I had to take these tests, so I took these tests. And then, you know, next thing I know, I get a certain grade in an advanced placement class, and never really thought twice about it. And then when I got to college, somehow I found out something. I think maybe my counselor there or something like that looked at my transcript and was like, you know, you have 38 college credits if you want them available to you. So the next thing I realized was that I could graduate, and I think it was like I could graduate in 2.5 years if I wanted to, but I opted to do it in 3 years. So I actually graduated in 3 years. But it meant that basically as soon as I entered college, they said, okay, you have to declare your major. I didn't have a year to think about it. And I, you know, it's funny what you learn about yourself when you're put on the spot. And I made a decision totally from the heart. And I realized I just wanted to study what I wanted to study. So while I'm at school, I'm like, well, what I want to study is music. I'd gone in there thinking I'd be a sociology or maybe an English mm-hmm. major. But I realized what I wanted to learn about more than anything in the world was music. So I declared a music major. Completed that, and at the same time, very capriciously had taken a couple of flight lessons. Oddly enough, because I had become, you know, I don't know if you're the same way, but sometimes I get obsessed with an album or a song or something like that, and it becomes part of my daily listening. And I'd gotten totally obsessed with the Pink Floyd song "Learning to Fly," and I've always been somebody who loves roller coasters. Like, I'm somebody where, like, if I'm in a commercial airliner and there's turbulence, I love it because it reminds me I'm in the air. So, so I've always kind of liked, you know, flying, being in the air, and, you know, the sense of G-forces, you know, like from roller coasters. And so I was walking around listening to my headphones and saw all these posters up at my school that said, like, discounts available at the local airport for college students. And it was $99 for 3 flights. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to learn to fly. And so I went to the airport, took a few lessons, totally loved it, and promptly realized that it was prohibitively expensive. Like, I was a college student. Like, you don't have dispensable income. And so there was just no possibility that I was going to be able to afford it. And then as graduation got closer, I started thinking about, like, okay, I've been playing guitar seriously for, about 3 years now. And I studied with just a magnificent classical teacher named Philip de Fremery, who is actually a student of Segovia. So I had phenomenal training, but nevertheless, I'd still only been playing for 3 years. And it seemed kind of absurd to me that I would now then go back to school and either get an advanced degree in performance or composition, or be teaching guitar after having played for 3 years. I kind of felt like I didn't want to get completely absorbed in the world of academia. And so I also noticed something that was alarming to me, which is that it seemed like more musicians than not had become very jaded, you know, in terms of, you know, very few people have 100% pure success. And I mean pure success in as much as that they're able to make a comfortable living doing music that involves no artistic compromises.
Right.
And so I thought, well, if I don't even worry about making money doing music, and if I just do the music I love to do, then I insulate the thing that I'm most in love with. I never have to have it tainted by the necessity of paying rent or buying groceries. And so I thought, well, if I got a second career that was somehow compatible enough in some way, then I could just do music the way I want to do it. And so that's when it kind of, I put two and two together, like, well, flying was too expensive as a hobby, but if it was a viable career, then I knew how much my flight instructors were making by the hour because I was paying them. And so I right. thought, well, you know, that's a pretty great hourly wage, meaning I would have to do minimum amount of work time, which equates to maximum amount of guitar time. And it's also a fun and interesting challenge, meaning that when I'm done at the end of the day, or, you know, done with my flight students or something like that, then I'm excited to pick up my guitar as opposed to drained from something that's mindless or not challenging. And so I graduated college and went right to flight school because I calculated that a year in flight school was about the same price as a year in college. So I justified it by thinking, well, I graduated in 3 years. Another year would have been the same price. Now I have a degree in music and all my pilot's licenses. Right. So then I flight instructed for a year, happened to just get to the airlines at a time where they were hiring really fast. I actually hadn't intended to go to the airlines. I just threw out my resume because people generally had to wait months and months and even years to get a call back from the airlines. And it just so happened that I sent my resume off when I had the minimum amount of time. The airlines were hiring a lot at that time. I got a call not months or a year later, but the following week for an interview the following week. And then they hired me on the spot to fly a jet, which you know, anybody who's gone to the airlines will understand that that's not something that happens every day. So I got really lucky and I thought, well, I should just try it. You know, the worst case scenario is I get paid to learn how to fly a jet. And, you know, if I don't like it, then I'll just go back to flight instructing. So that's how it pretty much worked out. Is I got paid to learn how to fly a jet, determined it wasn't compatible with doing music, and then went back to flight.
Well, I'm glad that you chose the musical path. And tell me about your musical. You've got a lot of musical projects. Starting with, well, I guess fresh after school, you were kind of doing a little bit more baroque classical music type thing. Before you got into more rock stuff, like, tell me, you're no longer part of AC/DC, right? But fun project that you
sure
took
was.
Part in.
It sure was. It was really funny because when that came about, I was kind of thinking in my brain about, like, you know, what are the things that I want in a band? You know, because I had played with a couple of bands, but much more, you know, not very seriously. You know, they weren't bands that were gigging a lot or anything like that. And I thought, okay, I want a band where I'm playing lead guitar. I want a band where I'm playing rock guitar. You know, because, like, I love classical guitar. I still love classical guitar, but the only reason I didn't take rock guitar in colleges because Smith College did not acknowledge rock guitar as something that was worthy of study. And I'm very glad that I studied classical guitar, but so it wasn't like it was a new development in my musical aesthetic or anything like that. I wanted to be playing rock guitar. And I also wanted something that was going to force me to get a little bit of stage presence because I'm naturally not a really, you know, I don't have that crazy gene that allows certain people to be incredibly charismatic. I don't have what like David Lee Roth or Mike Patton has. And at the same time, I understood I didn't want to be somebody who just stared at my fretboard all day. And then next thing I knew, I get this call from a mutual friend and this offer from ACDC. And I was like, well, that pretty much hits all of the key points that I was wanting to have in my band. And it was just a tremendous education. And we played some great shows.
Great. Were you always a fan of Angus Young?
Totally. I saw ACDC. ACDC for a time was the band I saw live more than any band. And then it turned out that the Dixie Dregs just toured more. So I ended up, I think they're the ones I've seen the most. But yeah, always been a fan of AC/DC.
Well, you look pretty convincing on stage, I gotta say, as Agnes Young, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you've also, and this is one of your current projects, and I know for the past 2 days you were gigging with Zeppurella. Tell me about that, because you're the girl Jimmy Page.
Yeah. We did not feminize the names, although I suppose I would be Jamie Page if we did. Zeppurella was actually something that Clementine, the drummer, she and I played in AC/DC together, and there was some gigs that we wanted to play that we were offered with AC/DC, and some people in the band wanted to play them and others didn't. And she and I were of the camp that really wanted to take some of these gigs. And so, you know, in a moment of, I think, kind of frustration with wanting to play more shows, Clementine turned to me and said, you know, I always wanted to do like a Led Zeppelin tribute band. And I immediately said, well, you know, consider me for the guitar player. Like if you actually do it, because, you know, as much as I adore AC/DC, Led Zeppelin was maybe even more near and dear to me. I don't know. It's hard to compare, but I also immediately recognized how incredible the education would be. Led Zeppelin is so expansive. I mean, everything from slide guitar to violin bows on Les Pauls to acoustic. So, Clementine is somebody I learned that if you tell her you're up for something, you better be prepared to deliver, because the next thing I knew is she called me and said, okay, our first gig's in 8 weeks. And I'm like, do you have a list of songs you want me to learn? So next thing I knew, I was shedding probably 4 hours a day on, you know, this list of Led Zeppelin songs, which I was hoping would be, you know, less monumental of Led Zeppelin songs. And I was going through them sort of from the top down, and two at the very bottom were Since I've Been Loving You and Heartbreaker. And I get to them and I was sort of like, oh, and called Clementine. I was like, what are you doing to me? I have to take an a cappella solo, like note for note. Like, like, do you realize this isn't, I mean, like, I strive to be the type of musician who feels great about that, but it made me more than a little bit nervous. But, you know, there was no weaseling out of it. She made me do it.
There's a lot of stage antics that Jimmy Page has always performed that are kind of hard to mimic. Or you know, I mean, if you're trying to look convincing, I guess it's kind of a tough thing to do. But you've done a good job. I've seen some of the performances.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Zeppurella, you know, is slightly different from AC/DC. AC/DC was definitely, you know, if the goal at least was if AC/DC were, you know, young women. Zeppurella has been more like, we're a band of musicians who love Led Zeppelin, and we try to honor the music by, you know, learning it accurately, but, you know, and incorporating stuff that's the vibe of Led Zeppelin. But, you know, I don't wear a dragon suit. You know, our singers don't have blonde wigs or anything like that. So we're less of the, we pay tribute less visually and more just musically.
Great. Now tell me about your solo project. You have a solo record coming out. When is the date? Like I know the single's been available since what, December or something on iTunes?
So December is when it was released on iTunes. Second single's coming out this week, and the album will probably be finished by the end of May. And one of the things that's holding it up a bit is I'm having my sister, actually, who's a trained opera singer. Mm. She's actually since gone into radiology and decided to be a doctor instead, but she has just a heartbreakingly beautiful voice. I'm actually having her sing on one track.
Because I thought I was under impression this was all instrumental, but there was.
Well, it is all instrumental. The one track she'll be singing on it actually doesn't have lyrics. It's very simple, and her part is, I think, going to be lovely. I could hire or have a different soprano on there, but I'm very close with my sister.
Oh, it wouldn't be the same, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So as soon as she can do it is going to be, I think, the end of May. So we're going to have everything all mixed, ready to go, and as soon as she can get in the studio, finish it up. So I think, you know, end of May will be cool. The time of the
piece. You have some really interesting cast of musicians on there. I know you even have Stu Hamm on there playing bass, which is great.
Yes, yes. If Stu Hamm says he'll play bass on your album, then Stu Hamm plays bass on your album.
Well, absolutely. You don't look for another bass player, that's exactly. For sure. How did you get a hold of Stu? How do you know him, or do
he's
you?
He's local, and we've worked with some similar musicians. In fact, Jude Gold, who is one of my bandmates, and I have an acoustic duo called Lap Dance Armageddon, and Jude is the other guitar player in that. He was the guitar player for the B x 3 tour. So he played guitar with Jeff Berlin, Billy Sheehan, and Stu Hamm.
Cool.
And so he and I have been sort of, you know, we work on our acoustic stuff together, and we're also kind of trying to help nudge each other to do our original solo albums. So we've kind of enlisted each other as co-producers. And when it came time to figure out a bass player, Jude suggested Stu. I said, that's going to happen. And next thing I knew, he called back and said, yes, Stu says we'll do it. So I was more than honored.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Does some amazing stuff. In fact, this next track, the one that is just being released, it's called Oleostrut. There's some very, very good Stu moments. I was actually stupid enough to like trade licks with him. At least you know the bass playing is going to be awesome.
Oh, Stu is such an amazing bass player. I just love his. You know, a lot of his solos with Satriani when he would do those. It's just like, wow, that's incredible fingers to do that kind of stuff that he does. So, and he's a fun guy too. So tell me about Valentino's Victory Lap, which is the first single on there. I noticed that even Xbox has purchased some his licensing the song.
I don't even know that much about it. It was one of those things that my manager said, you know, is this okay? And I said, sure. So I'm kind of idiotic when it comes to some of the business stuff, but you know, I feel like the more space I can open up for, you know, just thinking about, you know, my own writing and playing and performing, then, you know, so be it. But yeah, I think it's for some like online racing.
It's like Forza Motorsports, something Spaz Car Season 5 or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Intrigued. Yeah, it looks
I should know more about it. I'm embarrassed to say I don't, but all I know is that they wanted to use it, and you know, great.
Tell me if there was one musician that you would want to share a stage with, who would that be? I know. I think you've played with Steve Morse once, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, that was terrifying. I was actually not on stage with him at the same time, thank goodness. But I was I was honored to be the crappiest guitar player on stage that night. Actually, it was my acoustic duo Lap Dance Armageddon opened up for Steve Morse Band. Actually, two shows. Before shows, I will get focused. I will be serious about like, you know, wanting to do a good show. I haven't been that nervous in I don't know how long. I mean, it's just terrifying. Like, you know, to get to open for your hero is just such a profound honor. Yeah. And at the same time you think, well, it's not like I'm going to not do this, but could I have had like maybe 20 more years to practice before I did this?
What would you do if he just motioned to you hop on stage and join me while he was playing?
I think I would probably turn around and see who he was pointing at behind me.
but to play like a duo or something like that on stage, would Steve Morse be the one that you would want to? play with?
You know, that's such a terrifying concept. I don't.
I know.
I have to say, you know, one musician whom I totally worship, who I've not met, and who brings me to tears when he plays, is Jeff Beck.
Oh, I was going to say probably Jeff Beck.
Yeah. Oh, I can't even really speak of him coherently. Like, he's just, I just love what he does musically so much.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, I have been to a bunch of his shows, and literally, if I didn't actually totally lose it, I had to like firmly remind myself that there's no crying in rock. Like, it's like he plays a melody, just like the way he plays simple melodies is so heartbreaking. It's yeah. Jeff Beck is definitely I'm quite a fan.
Absolutely. Well, you're creating quite a buzz about yourself lately. Like, I've noticed that you're endorsing GHS strings, and you got some connections with DiMarzio. Is that all results of the latest NAMM, or is that before that? Or what were you doing at the latest NAMM? Because I don't know if you got some interesting endorsements or such. Or...
Yeah. I met, actually, okay, so GHS, I started working with them, in 2010, like spring. So about a year I've been with them. They're great. I mean, I've used their strings for years anyway, so it was just very fortunate that they decided that they wanted to work with me and, decided that they wanted to use me for an ad campaign, which is just tremendously awesome. And so, yeah, there's like, I think they've been running full page ads, over the last year or so in various guitar magazines. That's great. And then I met Larry DiMarzio, at the 2010 NAMM show, and great guy. I've always used DiMarzio pickups anyway in my Music Man guitars, so those, it was just, an obviously great thing for me, and I was honored that he wanted to do, we did a photo shoot, and I don't know if I'm still on the website, but I was for gosh, months. Featured alongside Greg Howe. So cool. And Music Man, one of my friends, or Jude, my bandmate, sent them without me knowing the video for Valentino's Victory Lap, and they noticed the really old Music Man guitar that I have in it, which is my first guitar, and they sent me a new one, which is in my next video, Oleostrut. So yeah, Music Man, I've actually, they've known me since I was like a kid, actually. But I've never really pursued them for anything in terms of endorsements, because I feel like, they know I love them. If they ever determine that I'm worthy, they know where to find me. So cool. I'm excited to be working with them, and Engel Amps too. So
excellent.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about the video. Did it hurt to put those wings on?
The sacrifices you go through to fly. the video was completely the concept of the director, who's named Eric Shamlin, and he's just an incredibly creative guy, very, very original, very skilled, and the sets were built by Jason Mitchell and Stacey Ransom. I guess Stacey Ransom built the sets. Jason Mitchell did the cameras. They're a production company called Purebred Productions, and Purebred had been wanting to work with Eric for a while on something creative. You know, they'd worked together on various, other projects. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to become their excuse for working together. So everybody just invested just incredible creativity and expertise, and the end result is a video beyond what I ever would have conceived.
Oh, it looks fantastic! I gotta say, it looks amazing. You look so composed playing, like you were saying that you don't have that outgoing personality on there. But I love how composed you look. Like, it's just so cool. It's just casual playing. That's just awesome.
Well, it's actually interesting, because for me, as somebody who has played far more gigs than shot videos. I'm not somebody who performs just for the sake of performing. It's like, if there's an audience there and and their energy is high and you feed off it and increases your energy and it, you know, it's becomes a cycle. It's a much different thing to be in an, like an empty studio with a bunch of people looking at you and a bunch of cameras. And then it's sort of like, okay, now play along with this track. You know, it, one thing I just never, ever want to be is disingenuous. And to me, I'm not really, I can't really see myself of just hamming it up for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, if I feel it, I do it. And other than that, it's like, I don't need a fan blowing on me and wagging my tongue at the camera to be really rock.
I can't wait to see the next video. Is it going to be the same direction? The same people involved in this?
Yeah, it's the same director. Stu's featured in it a lot. There was decided to do this, and the drummer too, John Mader. It's such a great showcase for Stu particularly, and John Mader, the drummer. It's the same guys who did Valentina's Victory Lap.
Mm-hmm.
They both did such a fantastic job, and you know, there's a trading lick section between the guitar and the bass. It's like, how can we possibly not have Stu in the video? And he was enough to agree to do it. And you know, it's really different video. It's much more casual, which was really fun, you know?
I can't wait to see it. So tell me, so May is the new album. What is the album going to be called?
That is a secret
okay. Okay.
I can say that, I won't say anything, but.
No, that's cool. That's fine. What, do you know what label this will be out on?
I'm doing it independently.
Oh, you are? Excellent. Very good. Very good. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us. All the best with all your projects. I know you also, do you still do Sticks and Stones as well?
Sticks and Stones has been on hiatus. The guitar player and I, Mikael, are still, you know, we're still in contact. We still play, you know, together, you know, but mostly just sit down and jam casually. You know, the main thing that with Sticks and Stones, so much fun to do. Like, and this sounds silly, but it's true. We were so loud that it actually became a difficult thing. You know, it was a good learning experience, is that when you are as a band easily 115 decibels, it's like you can't play any place but stadiums. And for a band that's sort of growing an audience and all of that, it's not like you can be like, okay, you know, Royal Albert Hall, we're ready to play there, you know? So some of it became that we were too big for the clubs around here, you know, just sonically.
Well, and that's not like, not even, that's without a bass too. Like, it's just without two guitars, right?
Our drummer Sam Adato was so powerful, fantastic drummer. And actually I got to see him open for Deep Purple with one of his other bands. Wow. And he did this amazing drum solo and he was just fantastic, but there's no turning down a powerful drummer. You know, they hit as hard as they hit, and that's what you get.
All right. Well, I hope you keep it loud and keep us entertained for a long time. And I wish you all the best with your solo projects and everything else with Zeppelin. I know you're hitting the road next week as well.
Yes.
With Zeppelin, a bunch of shows in California.
In Oregon, we're playing Cottage Grove on Friday or Thursday night, and Portland on Friday night, and Seattle on Saturday night.
Cool. I hope, there you go. I hope this airs before our listeners can catch. But where can they find more information about you?
Easiest thing is just myname.com. It's GretchenMenn.com.
We'll be right back.
duel there. That, of course, is the guitar exchange between Gretchen and Stu Hamm, best known for his work with Joe Satriani. What you're listening to is a song called Oleo Strut. And before the interview, you heard Valentino's Victory Lap. This is from an upcoming CD by Gretchen Men. That one should be out next month. And these two songs, these two singles, are available on iTunes if you want to support her and buy those for yourselves. Please, by all means. We are switching gears a bit. We're going to get a bit heavier. This is a dedication. We do have a survey still. I will take it down probably at the end of the month. But the extremepair.net, if you go to that site while it's still alive, I suppose, you can go and fill out a survey, quick survey, and you know, choose to do so. You can put down a track that you want to hear and maybe send a dedication to whoever you want. So this is somebody requested this little Slayer song. Left. was Slayer, and the title track on World Painted Blood, the last Slayer studio album. And that song was requested by a longtime listener of mine, Johan from the Netherlands. Good pick, Johan. And you know what? Johan picked even better. His daughter's name is Araya. Oh, I wanted to kill him for that. I love that name. I think that's amazing. Of course, Araya is Tom Araya's last name, but what a great name to name your daughter, and what a dedication to metal if you do that. Well, you know what? Somebody recently, a big name in metal, named one of their favorite Slayer songs and claimed that he listened to it for the first time. I think he's lying, and he can't really lie because he's a god boy. I'm talking about Dave Mustaine, who claims that Angel of Death is his favorite Slayer song. A word to Dave Mustaine. Well, guess what, Dave? It's my favorite Slayer song too, but it's been my favorite since 1986!
You say you hate something.
There is a lot I hate. Strawberries. Chocolate.
I thought I overheard. Yeah, right. Chocolate.
Yeah, I do. I hate chocolate.
You're the first woman I ever heard who hates chocolate.
It's gross. I like caramel.
You like... Oh, I'm hearing you poorly.
Caramel? Is that better?
Okay, yeah, yeah. No, I've remember on the 28th, February 28th, we were both going to go to two separate shows, right? You were going to go see Malevolent Creation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to go see Decrepit Birth and Cataclysm, and you know, the two bands canceled. Decrepit Birth 2 weeks before, and then Abysmal Dawn, you told me about it, they got held up at the border.
Yeah, I had to let you know as soon as I knew.
Yeah, and you know, I waited because I was that week, I didn't have a car at all, so I didn't get my tickets ahead of time, so I was going to get them at the door. To make a long story short, I got your news and I got really fucking pissed off, and I was like, I'm not going. So I, for like 3 days straight, and actually, you know, few days since then, in the last couple of days as well, I've been like cranking music. I've been recording a lot of music myself, just doing a bunch of test runs for a new CD and that. And I've just like, I'm going deaf. Fuck, I'm just like barely fucking, like, you keep talking to me. I got you cranked in my monitors here, but I'm like, so you gotta like speak up. You've had some hearing issues too recently, haven't you?
Yes, a lot. And unfortunately, mine weren't caused by any shows, which I wish they were, because I definitely love that.
Oh, yeah. Well, same. But you know what? It's funny because, you know, when you listen to, I don't know, maybe it's the age thing, but, you know, like, yeah, I love that too. You go to a show and you don't hear shit for a couple of days. But when you go to sleep and you're not, you haven't gone to a show for a few months and you fucking hear that in your ears, it's bad.
Yeah,
but I cause it myself, you know. I just pump fucking decibels into my ears at an alarming rate.
I would rather trade. I would go blind.
Oh, you know what?
If I was my hearing, I would give up my taste.
I would
my
give
smell,
up all the senses. Like, there's no way that I could move on. Live. I mean, sight is important. Obviously, do you want to get the music, you know, in all forms, and that includes sight, obviously. But man, if I had to give up, yeah, my sense of smell, fuck that. If I reek,
it's a benefit.
Especially if I reek, like, fuck, I wouldn't have to shower. I wouldn't have to worry about anything anymore. People around me, who gives a shit? But sense of hearing would just be the most devastating loss. You know what? I know this might be a good opportunity to do this. I know somebody in in BC, in British Columbia and Canada. Her name is Leanne. She works for a hearing clinic.
Oh, really?
Did I ever tell you about her?
I so thought you were going to tell me she was blind.
No.
No.
Oh, yeah. Why? Because she went out with me once? No, she didn't. I'm just kidding.
So she works for a hearing specialist. Yeah, does she give you a lot of crap about the metal, you know, and your evil loud music? Oh,
interestingly enough, you know what? I think she has enough credit to herself. She likes some metal. She's not a big metalhead, but she likes some metal. What if I gave her a call? Because I'm kind of concerned that I'm going to lose my hearing. Are you saying something or not?
No, I was absolutely stunned.
You're what?
I was stunned.
You know what? I got her number here. So, what do you think? Like, what if we gave her a call? Because, like, you know, I want to preserve my hearing. I know it sounds dumb. No, actually, it can't sound dumb that I'm trying to preserve my hearing. But I've been in bands. I've gone to countless shows in my life. What if we gave her a quick call? I got her number here.
Yeah. Let's call her. Yeah,
it might be educational for us. Like, we don't have a lot more on the show going, so what if we just give her a quick call here? Let me see if I can add her in. Leanne.
See if she can save us.
Yeah. If she can lead us not to the temptation. Okay, let's see. Okay, I'm calling.
Hello?
Leanne?
Yes.
It's Dario.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Good. You know, interesting talking to you. I was just on your website, Focus on Metal, today, and here you are. It's amazing. I was reading this really cool article about one of my favorite musicians from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and I was just thinking about you. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've got Mandy with me, and we actually, you know what we're doing? We're calling you on the show. Oh, I hope you don't mind. We're calling you on the show. Yeah, you're on the air.
Mandy. Hey, how are you, Mandy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Okay, so what do you need? What do you need?
Well, you know what? We're actually looking for some advice. We're looking for some help. And you know, I'm having some... Mandy and I have some hearing problems. You're going to have to speak up.
Oh, man. Yeah, welcome to the world of the rock musician hearing, hey?
Yes. So I want to know, how long do I have till I go deaf?
Well, you know what? You'll likely never go deaf. You know, this is something that it's a huge misconception.
Oh.
You don't go deaf. You start to lose your sensitivity to sound, because when you're playing music for a living, or when you're just like this huge lover of music, the nerves that pick up sound and transmit that information to your brain start to kind of get worn out faster than the average person's, right? Rock musicians and people that deal with music all day long, even musicians, you know, like music teachers in schools, mm-hmm. are exposing their ears to more extreme sound than the average bear. And, I mean, it's fantastic, right? It's like you're living the dream. You're doing what you want to do. But at the same time, you're kind of hurting your hearing faster than the average person. So you know what? I always knew that we were going to have this conversation one day. Being in the industry that I'm in, I see and talk to a lot of musicians, and I'm so glad to see them because they're being proactive about their hearing, right?
Right.
So what's going on with you and Mandy?
Mandy had some problems. I'm not going to speak for you.
Oh, why not?
Well, because
Mandy's a big girl. Mandy can talk for herself.
Yeah, I've had problems. Actually, they go back to childhood, where I guess my eustachian tubes are backwards. So I did have tubes put in as a kid, and I've had awful allergies. And then just the past year, my allergies have just started to get worse and worse, and it's going to all kinds of foods and everything. So my allergies are just bombarding me. And it feels like, at least like the past couple of months, like I'm underwater. I can't hear anything. And when people do talk too loud, like the reverberation in my eardrum hurts. And I have a lot of pain. And I keep going and having my ears looked at say I'm like a positive. I've got an infection. It hurts. I can't hear. It's I'm like clogged. And so every time they kept telling me no, you look fine. You look fine until the day that my eardrum started bleeding, and then they said, "Oh no, we think you have an infection." And I went on antibiotics for 2 weeks, but most of the pain is gone now, but I'm still not hearing very well.
And you know what? I can still hear it in your voice as well. A lot of times you can hear congestion in a person's sinus cavities through their voice.
Yeah.
And you still have lots of fluid buildup going on. If it was a nasty enough infection to make your ears bleed, it's going to take a little while for the fluids to start to drain out of the mastoid cavities that are around your ears. This is a good thing for you, though, because this is something that can be fixed and will go away. Mandy, you're in the States, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
You know what? You know what, Leanne? Can I break for a second?
Sure.
Mandy right now is experiencing Canadian healthcare. This is free advice.
There you go. See, now I wanted to ask you, Mandy. Do you guys, if you have like some of the most amazing healthcare down in the United States, do you have access to ear, nose, and throat specialists down there?
Only if I have the money.
Okay, it's one of these things. Okay, well, you know what? You've got a family doctor, and a lot of times family doctors can continue to treat like ear infections and stuff really successfully as well. So keep in touch with your medical professionals. This usually needs, like you were saying, antibiotics, and it's really good that it's starting to go on its way out. But there should be like an improvement week by week. Sometimes it takes a little while, but if somebody is paying attention and you've got the ability of being able to have somebody take a look at your ears, you know, like say once every 3 weeks or so, as you get better, your hearing will get more open as the fluid actually allows more sound waves to get through and be processed properly.
Oh, that would be good. My mama actually.
Does that make any sense to you?
What?
Oh, is that right? Your mom can see inside your ear?
Yeah, she has. She's a physician's assistant. She's got one of those little ear things.
Fantastic.
On. So every time I'm like, even look, just look in it.
That's awesome. See, that's even better than the Canadian healthcare system. Having a mom that knows her way around the medical field is perfect.
Tells you to stop whining.
This will get better and better. You have probably the sense of hearing loss that you've got right now may be part of what's called a conductive hearing loss, where something physical is actually slowing the sound down from being processed by your inner ear, right? That fluid buildup really doesn't allow sound to go through into your inner ear the way it does when everything is all normal, right? But this is going to get better. But you know what? The whole idea that you're having trouble with your hearing is really good because it kind of opens up a dialogue between us. Because as musicians and people that really enjoy music, all of your listeners and the people that enjoy, you know, like the heavy metal, really need to be aware that there's great ways of being able to protect your hearing and still enjoy the music the way that the music should sound, right?
And do I still get that feeling after I leave the show, you know, that I've just been totally
bombarded
by it? I can't
with
hear
gazillion decibels.
Disoriented. Do I still get that whole experience?
Yeah, you know what? There's absolutely, you won't have that huge, like, your head is hollow anymore. Part of it's kind of like aftershock from being bombarded by too much sound over a long period of time. It's a tough thing, but there's actual monitors that are available for purchase that you put inside your ear. Like the monitor has a little earpiece, and you put the earpiece in your ear, and it's like an iPod-sized thing. And you can twist the dial until the sound that's going to your ear is within a safe level. And it's really, really important that you are able to hear the music exactly the same way. Because, I mean, that's what the enjoyment of music is right? To be able to hear the rich sound and the nuances and, like, how cool the whole thing sounds when it's all put together. But you have to be able to protect your hearing at the same time if you do this for a living. Like, people that listen to it recreationally, I don't think that they're going to do a huge amount of damage over a long period of time. It's the people that have the headphones right up to their ear that have to be careful. Any musicians that wear that inner earpiece thing, have to be real careful that they're staying within safe limits.
Leanne, let me ask you this, because you're saying, you know, we're being exposed to music, and I'm a part-time musician, and of course I go to see a lot of metal shows and that, and so does Mandy.
Oh, wonderful.
But I'll tell you something. My father, who's never listened to music in his whole life, never been to a live show, he recently installed this device in his vehicle that's this electronic rust repellent. Of course, I live in the prairies, and of course, so we have a lot of salt problems and stuff like that, and cars rust with time. So when he purchased a new vehicle, he installed this thing. He opened up a hood to show this thing to me, and this thing had such a high-pitched sound to it. I'm like, whoa, turn this thing off or whatever. And my dad goes, what are you talking about?
poor man. He's probably lost his high frequencies a little bit, too.
I know. So what I keep hearing about a noise-induced hearing loss, and then I'm hearing age-related hearing loss. Tell us the difference, and can we expect it to get worse? Because, I mean, if my dad can't hear that, and it was hurting my ears, and my ears are partially damaged.
Hey, what did your dad do for a living?
I tell you, he was never exposed he never worked in an environment, like a factory environment or anything like that, where he'd be bumping some sounds. So he spent a good chunk of his life driving a truck, so...
Well, oh, see, but interestingly enough, truckers have really quite often, a huge amount of the time, noise-induced hearing loss, because back in the day, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, before air conditioning was really part and parcel of most commercial vehicles, guys used to drive with the window rolled down, right? That wind sound going through the window is really hard on a person's ears.
And it hurts.
Isn't that interesting? I had no idea that noise from truck drivers actually start to sustain high frequency hearing loss over a long period of time. See, it's the noise itself beats up the high frequencies. It doesn't necessarily beat up the low or the mid tones. It's the receptors that pick up the high frequencies that always get damaged first by noise. There's like a specific shape to a noise-induced loss audiogram that doesn't exist in an age-related hearing loss. Mm-hmm. They can be kind of similar, but noise-induced losses have been kind of scientifically proven to be sort of one shape over a long period of, like, if they're always like that. Age-related hearing loss has a tendency to kind of wear out in all of the frequencies. Noise-induced hearing losses, your low frequency, like your ability to hear bass and mid-tones, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's the high frequencies that you don't hear. So when people talk to you, have you ever had your grandpa accuse you of mumbling, or somebody accuse you of mumbling? And like,
well, and I'm going to be that guy, but I don't want to be, you know, 50 at that level.
Well, you know what? It's important that it's better late than never, right? With all types of musical like exposure, like with musicians, somebody that's doing it part-time should be protecting their ears when they're actually playing their music. There's like specific tables of decibels that you can be exposed to, and there's time periods that you can be exposed to accordingly. And the louder the music, obviously, the less time you can be exposed to it, because it's not just the noise that hurts your hearing ultimately, it's the amount of time you expose to it, your ears to it as well.
So tell us what would be safe. For example, I know you're in your profession. Do you see a lot of younger people now with hearing loss? I mean, I hear a lot, and I'll leave it to the expert like yourself to straighten me out here. But I know that the earbuds are a big culprit in this thing. That they're
terrible
thing to experience music for that reason.
Well, there's been articles out there, you know, advising parents to put locks on kids' iPods and stuff. But you know what? It's part of being a teenager, listening and losing yourself into really loud music. You know, we all stuck headphones on or tried to get away with cranking it up in our bedroom when we were kids. But what we were doing was trying to drown out the world with the sound. So trying to keep a kid from putting his iPod in for, you know, like, and keeping it within a safe level, you've only got control for so long. I think that the only thing that we can do as parents is to just educate them and hope that they don't crank up the volume too much and wear them for too long. So they can listen to loud music on their iPod. They just can't listen to it for a long period of time. They have to take it off and give their ears a break. It's good for their brain. It's good for everything just to shut things off for 5 minutes and then put them back on again. That's been something that's been, you know, sort of scientifically proven that there's only so long your ear can tolerate that type of loudness, like that type of decibel level, without ultimately starting to cause some damage.
Yeah. So, but there is a difference between earbuds and regular, like, you know, over the head headphones or the big cans like I'm using right now.
The closer to the eardrum, the less noise you need, or that you really should be exposing your ears to, because of the proximity of the sound waves so close to your eardrum, right?
Okay.
As the farther away you get, the more airspace there is more chance of everything being kind of absorbed a little tiny bit more. So the closer, but oddly enough, though, the ones that are really close to your eardrum, you can get better clarity, especially with custom-fitting things. Like, what a lot of people are being recommended to do now is to wear the ones that are, like, instead of wearing just an ordinary iPod earbud, when you're listening to your music, get something built around that earbud so it fits your ear perfectly, so that the weight of the earphone is completely sort of dispersed. They're totally comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of richness of sound you get with these things is just phenomenal. And you don't need to have the decibel level in your iPod nearly as loud as you do to drown out the world with your headphones, just as is, right? There's a lot of solutions. So much better to be preventative when you're young, when you're in your 20s, when you're in your 30s and 40s. All of those, like any time you start protecting your ears is a good time to start protecting your ears. And it's never too late. Never too late. You don't have to worry too much about your hearing, though. I think that you need to get your hearing tested. Have you had your hearing tested?
You know what? I have. I've always had a sort of, well, when I was in my early 20s, I had a job in a recycling plant, and I was crushing a lot of glass. And I did wear hearing protection. I have an office job now for many years, but early 20s. But I skimped out on a lot of hearing protection. Just the odd time when I just threw a bottle, and I mean that was probably the most horrible thing. But whenever I jammed with a very close space with people, mm-hmm. you know, especially having cymbals right by at my ear level, I always used hearing protection. So
good man,
I'm okay
yeah, that
there.
Was really
but
good
I could never go, and I'm sure Mandy can say the same thing. I could never go to a metal show with wearing hearing protection.
It's not the same.
I've tried it. It's awful.
Now, have you tried custom fitting musician molds? This is
no.
a completely different, this is a whole different breed of kitty here. This is something that actually lowers the sound but doesn't take a thing away from the actual nuances of the music. You'd still be able to feel the low frequencies on your face. It'd still be like making your heart beat at the same time. You'd still be able to feel it going through your hair, but your ears themselves would be protected just enough to keep it under safe levels so that you can listen to it for the rest of the show without doing huge damage to your ears. There's different filters that you can get as well. Like you can get, 9, 15, 25 decibel filters. And this is not decibels in actual like frequency to frequency decibel. This is like overall gain and stuff.
Okay.
These will allow, so you can change them up so that when you're practicing at home, you can pop your 15 filter in that will keep your hearing really nicely protected. But, you know, you won't have to listen to it won't be like the experience of the show, right, the big metal show. You got to feel that stuff. You got to feel the richness of the sound. But there's a way of being able to just protect your eardrums from that sound from going through your ears too bad at a really wicked level so that you can continue to do this when you're like 90 years old. You need to be able to continue to hear some music, right?
Oh, when I talk to you when I'm 90... Oh my God. I'm going to be wearing amplifiers in my ears.
Oh God! So by then we'll have them wirelessly
oh, yeah.
into our eardrums or something. Yeah, it's crazy the stuff that they're coming up with amplification, especially for noise-induced losses. Like,
yeah.
Even if like this is really important, and I need to get this message out. You have to get your hearing checked. It should be part of everybody's like medical regime. Most hearing clinics. You know, that are in the practitioners, they need to insert impression material into your ear, and they have to be certified. Don't let any nut just push this impression material into your ear.
It's not like putting a cotton swab in your ears and clearing some wax out of your ears. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it is. And another thing, don't candle your ears. I'm a huge fan of alternative therapies. Candling your ears is not a good thing to do.
It's not.
It puts too much, No.
It puts too much pressure on a really delicate little organ, your eardrum. Super delicate skin. It's like a drum, right? And it's attached to a little bone, and candling pulls on it, so it can actually tear away from the bone. Yeah, so I think, is there anything else? Did we cover pretty much everything you wanted to?
Oh, I think we did, and I thank you so much for the info. I think it was very educational. And
awesome.
We'll stay in touch, and I'll definitely, hey, if you can put a link on yours to our show. No. You want to test your hearing? Check out Focus on Metal.
Focus on Metal. Oh yeah. We'll get our 69-year-old grannies cruising the website, feeling all proud because they're navigating their computer system.
For sure.
And then click on that. Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Awesome. Oh, that's so great. It's been really, really good talking to you both. I hope that I could help.
You were more than helpful.
Content.
Thanks, Leanne.
You're welcome. Dario, keep in touch, and I'll look forward to hearing your podcast.
Leanne, before we let you go here, what song can we crank for you? Just give me something a little extreme, though. Huh?
Sadama Go Go.
Oh, really? By Gwar? Yeah. You like that one?
Let's go with, you had me at Gwar. I have a story. Okay.
Yes, please tell.
My future son-in-law, Mandy doesn't know this story, okay. My future son-in-law, my daughter, my oldest daughter, Brienne, she's this beautiful, beautiful blonde. She was bringing her, this really special person over for dinner. And, we're all nervous to meet each other because this is, like, big stuff. She didn't bring over, guys sort of like, every person she ever dated. They were special as she brought them over, right? Yeah. So when he came in, we had just already decided that instead of fussing over our iPod and, getting the perfect ambient music playing for I think it was Thanksgiving dinner, we just let our iPod go, right? So we were all sitting down for dinner, and of course Gwar comes on, and it's just cranked up, and he was listening to that and kind of smiling to himself. And then when we got to talking and get to know each other a little bit later, I was saying, I really apologize for the whole background music thing. And he goes, oh no, he said, that's when I knew I could fit in. He said, really, he had me at Gwar.
Become a catchphrase now for you.
You had me at Gwar is now definitely a family catchphrase. It's awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but no, it's good. I'm glad that our children listen to the same music that we do. I think it's fantastic.
Saddam. They shall drown in their own blood. We are Saddam. Go, go, go.
right after our chat with Leanne, whom you can, by the way, catch at hearingloss.ca. We heard Sadama Go-Go from This Toilet Earth. That was Guar. Oh, the track that's finishing right now is the new Cavalera Conspiracy. This is the opening track called Warlord. And the album was just released at the end of March, and it's called Blunt Force Trauma. And you know what, guys? I have to read this twice because I just didn't grasp this. Back in 2008, so 3 years ago, Cavalera Conspiracy, which of course is the Cavalera brothers, Igor and Max, formerly of Sepultura, reuniting and you know, gave us the Inflicted album 3 years ago. That one opened the first week with 9,000 units sold, and on Billboard chart, it registered at number 72. Well, 3 years later, Blunt Force Trauma opened with around 5,000 copies, so just a little over half of that. And it positioned itself at number 11. Yeah, it's hard to grasp these numbers, guys. A little over half, it goes from number 72 to 11. I think music as we know it is pretty much dead. Maybe not as an art form, but definitely not as an income for anybody. Other than, you know, huge bands. Ones that have been around for a long time. You know what? That pretty much tells me that, you know what? You know what? When Cannibal Corpse was you know, first couple of albums and that, they freaking, those things sold over 100,000 each over the course of its lifespan and that. But I'm sure in the first week or so, they would have sold more than 5,000 copies. That means Cannibal Corpse could have been in the top 10, maybe even top 5 on Billboard today. So, I mean, I don't know what the number you had to sell to be at number one. Maybe it was a terrible week or something. But guys, you know what? 3 years ago, those albums, that 9,000 that was sold, that did not include, or they didn't calculate the digital sales at that time. This is including CD sales and digital. It's pretty bad. Guys, I'm going to end this episode with a bit of a rant. And it's not what you think. I'm sure you're thinking, oh, he's going to bitch about the people stealing music and all that stuff. You know what? I leave that to the old timers. I'm an old timer, but I don't, you know what? I kind of have a forward thinking here. I'm trying to help out these bands. You know what? I got to be honest. I'm a little sick of hearing, not lately. I don't hear it very much lately. Maybe I just let it slip by. I mean, it used to piss me off when, you know, an older generation of bands would bitch about music sales and that, and, you know, not what it used to be. Well, fuck, at least, guys, you had your chance. You sold some shit in the past. The new bands, new artists know coming into this that they're not in this for the money. It is a completely different music industry these days. You know, it is bad that stores have to close. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, it's a different generation now. Us old people, you know, we're not the primary, you know, consumers. And unfortunately, the new generation just figures, you know, it's digital. Why should I pay for it when it is widely available everywhere? But the fact that CD format is dying, that shouldn't be a big surprise to anybody. I mean, I've gone through this in the past. I caught the tail end of, you know, the four tracks. I didn't fucking get into that at all. I started with cassettes and I've seen that come and go. That died. Vinyl died and kind of resurrected itself as a kind of a niche thing. And CDs, you know, the popularity, I thought that thing ruled for many years, you know, late 80s, early 90s is when CDs were predominantly, the music was sold on CDs. And, you know, the death of CDs was only predictable. But the death of music itself as a selling, you know, selling music on in whatever format, that is kind of unexpected and kind of sad, actually. Well, I shouldn't say unexpected. You know, the writing was kind of on the wall. once the file sharing came in existence. But here's the thing, like, you know, I'm going to bitch about something, but before I get into that, you know, how about if, you know, the message to the young people, because I, and a whole generation of people like myself, we spent all our income. I used to work part-time job and go to school, and all I would do is spend my money on music. That was it. That was my only hobby, and it remains such to this day. You know, being in the media and having access to a lot of free music, well, just basically, I don't buy as much anymore. I don't have to. And besides, I do have a lot of money to I don't have a lot of money to spend, having, you know, a mortgage and family of four. So, I mean, it's got to be stretched many ways. But the message to you young people, if you're not buying music, you know, do yourself a favor and do the bands a favor. If you go to shows, and I hope you do go to see a lot, because there's everywhere in the world, there's a lot more choice to seeing bands now that they don't spend as much time in the studio. They spend a lot more on the road. You know, it's support them, buy their gear, buy their shirts, their merchandise, their whatever it is they're selling. You know, they make a lot more money that way than they do from the deals from the CDs and that. You know, but the message to the old schoolers that I have, especially the bands who keep bitching about music, you know, not being the same. Well, you know what? Like I said, you had your turn. You made a little bit of money. You made a name for yourself. You could probably, you know, ditch the label if you really wanted to and go indie and sell your shit from your website and that. But I do have other suggestions for you. Why not, if you're a guitarist, why not provide people with lessons? Online lessons. We had Chris Letchford of Scale the Summit on the show a couple months ago. Month and a half ago, and he does online lessons, and guess what? That same technology, that modern technology that supposedly killed the music, is now, you know, coming to the rescue. Why don't we embrace it? You know, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't get on Skype and provide lessons to people in different countries at the same time. They're learning from you. You know, all you do is turn your amp on, your webcam on, and class is taking place. You know, you've got students. You're making yourself a lot more money than selling music. So if you have a name for yourself, and the old schoolers out there, why not embrace the technology and provide a service like this to your fans? I know that if somebody that I really looked up to, and I have a lot of, I draw a lot of influence from a lot of musicians, I would totally jump on the idea, even just to do one lesson, pay in advance, you know, whatever it is. I think those kind of lessons go anywhere from $40 to $60 an hour. Fuck, if you can gather a class of, 10, 15 people once a week, fuck, you're rolling. Hey, this is a great idea. I mean, you're interacting with somebody that you've been idolizing, you know, you're asking him questions and he's, you know, showing you how he does this stuff. You know, this is far better than watching somebody's instructional DVD. This is really personal, right? You know, message to drummers, for example. Take Kevin Tolley that I talked about from Dying Fetus. He was offering his services to anybody out there who needed drums tracked. You know, I almost went for it, and I'm a musician who doesn't make a dime from my music. And you know what? I wanted to have something memorable, like having Kevin Tolley, you know, a well-known musician, participate on my album. And I came really close, but I know there's got to be people out there who would love to see, you know, you track drums for the, and, you know, I mean, hell, Gene Hoglan, Derek Rohde, Pete Sandoval, George Collias, Ray Herrera, he's not doing much right now, Paul Bostaph. I mean, there's tons of drummers. Just announce your services, you know. You were sitting in a studio, you're farting around doing nothing. You know, invite people. Ask them, you know, $200-$300 per song, and you're going to do it. It's going to take you, you know, an hour, 2 hours maybe to earn that kind of money. That's not fucking bad. It's extra income. Another message for drummers, I would fucking totally love this. I always want drum loops. Fuck, man. Get in the studio, track the shit, fucking record like a whole bunch of loops, you know, and different different drums per, beats per minute. You know, I need different fills or, you know, some cool grooves and shit. You know, I might be a minority here, but I know this is a growing market. You know, people sit at home and, you know, just love doing this kind of thing. I'm a, you know, part-time hobbyist. You know, I love this, doing this kind of shit. And I know there's got to be tons of people, and you don't need a lot. You just need a computer, software, a few plugins, maybe a mixer board, some effects processor. I mean, shit you probably have lying around the house already. You make your music, and you know what? How cool would that be to have a real fucking drummer? I mean, I'm paying through the nose for a pretty generic drummer and a CD that, you know, they came up with. But I would pay for a name, you know, and for example, and guys, this is fucking totally simple, and it costs you nothing. If you have access, and I'm talking once again to old schoolers out there, and maybe not even to anybody, really, you have access to your master tapes. Fuck, all you do is you isolate your drums and sell the entire fucking drum tracks from your music. How awesome would that be to, for example, do a cover of, I don't know, Angel of Death, and have Dave Lombardo's real fucking drums in the background, and I just lay my own guitar and bass and vocals and shit like that. A lot of people would pay for that stuff, and I vouch for that. I know for a fact. Let's stop bitching and be a little bit more proactive. The money isn't going to come to you anymore. You got to go and do it. This is a completely different music landscape these days, guys. You gotta think of it in those terms. What about those young bands? They have to be very proactive. They have to be their own entrepreneurs, you know? And think of ways to make ends meet. People, there's ways to make money. This is not to say or undermine the fact that music is suffering and, you know, the store closures and that. And, you know, bands will always be, the bands that we enjoy, guys, especially the more underground ones, are always going to be suffering musicians. And you know what? Back in the 80s, early 90s, when they were making money, and I don't want to sound like an old grandpa here, but they were using that on drugs. Well, they don't have money to spend on drugs anymore, and they can still produce killer music. It's not drug-induced, I suppose. And they're not wasting themselves and killing themselves. I totally sound like a grandpa right now. That is just not metal. Guys, I'm going to go. You can send me hate mail to Dario at focusonmetal.net. You can reach any one of us at shout@focusonmetal.net. We do have a couple blogs. Nobody updates them anymore, but do check them out. Sometimes something interesting comes up. Maybe if you subscribed and we noticed that people are subscribing. A lot of people are checking us out, just not subscribing, but checking us via Google. Actually, quite a few hits we get. So there's a blog. You can go to our main website, focusonmetal.net, and you can see all the links to us, and that includes our Facebook page, MySpace, YouTube, and the blog, and whatever else I'm forgetting. Guys, I'm working on a bunch of new interviews. Some of these artists are pretty freaking kick-ass. I know you guys love them. And that's going to be coming up on in the next Psycho Dungeon. Well, hopefully, focus on extreme metal. I would prefer that by 1,000 to 1. And so would you. To get my ass kicked out of here, send the hate mail to Dario@focusonmetal.net. Please save me. Just put me out of my misery. I'm going to put this show out of misery and end this one with an extreme classic. And this one, a German rock hard magazine has called it the number one of 25 most important death metal albums of all time. This was recorded at the famous Morrisound Recordings in Tampa, Florida, released on November 16th, 1988. Produced by Dan Johnson and one and only Chuck Schuldiner. This is Chuck Schuldiner's Death from the Sophomore album called Leprosy. And the track is called Open Casket. I hope you enjoy this. I'm Dario Psycho. And until next time, stay focused on metal.